Hi everyone, welcome to STEPS audio channel. We are very excited to share our content from STEPS events to learn all about the latest trends in startups, digital media, fintech, future tech, and wellness in emerging markets. You can find us on Anagami, Spotify, and Apple Podcasts. Make sure to subscribe to your favorite channel, and we hope you enjoy the content.
Well, hello everyone. Thank you so much for joining us in this exciting conversation. So first off, my name is Elnora Belialova. I'm a director of PR at Luna PR, a PR communications agency that connects tomorrow's technology with today's audiences. I've got an incredible lineup of panelists with me today, and I'll start off from the other corner. We've got Mariam Alansari, who is the founder of the Pathfinders Agency and the part of the team behind LinguaGPT, a complex AI-based language model. To her right is Karim Tu, head of AI at Ukudo, an innovative digital identity company. Next to him, we've got Andrea Ronchi, head of MENA at Datrix Group, a publicly listed tech company specializing in augmented analytics and machine learning. And last, but by far not least, we've got Sandra Halu, a CEO of MetaMinds Group, a metaverse and spatial web technology company. All right, well, thank you so much for being here today. So before we get on to the all of the exciting questions, I just wanted to set a bit of a context for our discussion today. I'm sure AI has been flooding everyone's news apps. And as of recently, we've seen the launch of Sora. Please raise your hand if you've seen that incredible video from them. Amazing. Perfect. So a lot of audience here is familiar with it. Well, as soon as the excitement kind of quieted down, the worry and the concern started to arise across the media about Sora and how it might perpetuate biases and stereotypes because of the training materials that it uses to operate. On the other hand, please raise your hand if you're using Google Bard. Okay, watch out, because as of recently, Google's Bard is going to be reading private messages of all Android users. Google says that it's to improve their experience of all of their customers, but obviously it opens a lot of privacy concerns. So start off with this kind of introduction on where we are at when it comes to ethics and biases in AI. I have the first question, and it's probably the most common one. What can we do? Is there anything that can be done in order to target this issue of biases and ethics when it comes to AI algorithms? I mean, more often than not, we hear about, data sets being the issue. I'd love to hear your thoughts, Mariam.
So to begin with, I think the first step is to realize that there are entities that take our privacy, invades our privacy, and they have the power to invade our privacy. And the second step would be not to include anything sensitive on your ChatGPTs or any of these generative AI platforms. Such we were having this conversation how Samsung or Amazon's employees literally put all of their codes on ChatGPT and then it completely ingested the codes and then they could use it in terms of maybe giving it to the competitors or something of sorts. And so realizing that, first of all, it's not as safe as you think it is. You don't have a say in this. You can't really say, no, you can't use my information to make the process better or use it to make the processes better in the sense that you can't use my data sets. And so I think what we need to have is awareness and spread this awareness amongst each other who don't know much about the fact that startups or other companies can access your information.
That's so interesting. I think that's from the perspective of users ourselves. Like, what can we do to actually, either keep these companies accountable or maybe use the applications without, putting ourselves in danger, which is a great point. The follow-up on that, though, is from the startup's perspective, the tech perspective, and Karim, maybe you'd want to share a few insights on that. We always talk about data. We always talk about data sets. Is there anything in how the algorithms of AI actually operate that can also be addressed?
So let's maybe take a step back to just understand what do we mean by bias. Because usually when we hear the bias term, we automatically think about societal biases. So gender bias, race, skin color, stereotypes, and so on. But we need to understand that there's two main categories of biases. There's societal biases, which usually is related to the data set itself. And then we have, from the technical point of view, we have what we call statistical bias, which is a technical term. So this is usually related to the model architecture, the design of the AI model we're developing, to the loss function, which usually means the objective, what is objective we're optimizing. And then we have the optimizer itself, the algorithm that optimizes the weights to reach this objective function. So usually statistical bias is caused by these elements, not from the data set itself. So for example, let's take a case where the data set itself is not biased at all. We create a data set, which is really difficult to do eventually, without any biases. And we train a model, but we fine-tuned, or maybe even we chose the hyperparameters in a way that creates statistical bias. So our system will be biased, but it's not related to the data set itself. It's the model design. If we take the other way around, which is if we design a great model, statistically speaking, it's a sane model, it works well, it optimizes well the loss function. However, the data set itself is biased, our model is also biased, but it's a different type of bias. So the root cause of bias should always be investigated. It's not always data sets, it could be the model itself. I think here we can maybe switch to another, let's say, topic on that subject, which is there's a huge issue in the, let's say, AI community, which is in research, in AI, research AI, they usually optimize by reducing the statistical bias. So they want to create the best model that reduces statistical bias, but they benchmark on open source data sets like ImageNet. ImageNet, if you know, almost 50% of ImageNet, it's images of breeds of dogs. And it's used currently by most of researchers to benchmark their image recognition systems. So most of the open source data sets used, COCO, even let's say ImageNet and others, are biased. But researchers do not care about that. They are optimizing statistical bias. When it comes to AI engineers, startups, when they go, they choose the best model in the benchmark, they fine-tune it, but they did not notice the bias inside these models. Then when they fine-tune it, even if their own data set is not biased, the whole system is biased because it inherited biases from the pre-trained model. And that needs to be solved.
It seems that even though I think public attention is always goes to, you know, data and, you know, how it's used and where does the data come from, there's quite a lot of other factors that are in play. And it's interesting how you've compared, you know, the goals and the objectives maybe between academia and research versus maybe the more commercial and business orientated area. So I think it's an interesting question is, how do you balance, right, between, and I think this is the, from on the business perspective, a lot of CEOs and, you know, executive teams have to answer the question, is commercial benefits versus your ethical principles, right, when it comes to AI, when it comes to new technology, is there a balance to be kept? Is it all about self-accountability, or is it necessary to have another third party to be, you know, introduced into the market in order to protect the consumers? I mean, Andrea, I think you can share some thoughts on that.
Well, I think the issue, following also Karim's speech, is about the purpose, you know, of the AI models that you are deploying. Because if we, let's say, make a simplification, so let's try to cluster AI models into three major categories: descriptive, predictive, and prescriptive. When it's about using these three categories for optimizing or predicting or describing a physical process, I think the bias, even the technical, the statistical bias, can be an issue just for the possibility to reach a good objective function, but it's not raising a moral issue or an ethical issue. When it's about social transactional operation, that's where the problem arises. So if you stick to descriptive and predictive models, even if the system you are building is biased or have something that it's maybe related with the data sources you are inputting, the damages are overall contained. So there are privacy issues potentially, there are stereotype reinforcement issues potentially, but you are not creating something that it's really affecting on the mid-long term the way the society is developing.
Just a quick question, because you said description, prediction, and prescription. Can you give like an example for each category when it comes to AI? I think it would make the conversation a lot more realistic.
Absolutely. Like we can use AI models to describe a phenomena, okay? And we use AI because in this way we can plot all the variables that can have an effect in the process we want to model, and AI give us the opportunity to discover all the interactions between the variables that are giving you a precise description of that phenomena. For instance, we can have a descriptive model for understanding in digital marketing where a customer is better fitting among our clusters of customers, or in industrial processes, we can have descriptive algorithms to understand which are the causes that can create damages in a, I don't know, power plants or in a production manufacturing factory. Prediction is when I want to use this description to understand what can happen in case one of those variables is changing. And it allows me to make a better prediction of what's the effect on the phenomena that I'm plotting. Prescription is when I want to tell you, do this in order to avoid this to happen, or in order to stimulate that thing to happen. And I think now it's even better, and it's even easier to understand the potential risk when you apply prescriptive algorithms in social interactions, in social transactional processes. Because if I want to let's stay in the tricky environment of digital marketing and advertising. If I want to give you a customized experience, I use descriptive algorithms to understand who you are, and I use predictive algorithms to understand what can happen in case I stimulate you in some way. But prescription means telling you what to do in order to trigger your actions. And this is the end of the free will. And that's the real ethical issue. For instance, in Datrix, when we work for the optimization of oil and gas facilities, we all go to sleep very, you know, quietly, because we know that the descriptive, the predictive, and the prescriptive algorithms are made for predicting maintenance issues. When we are called to apply this in the financial institution sector or in the marketing sector, we take into consideration which are the purposes.
So that's an interesting point. And like, I mean, a great point in the sense where, you know, like AI can be used in many different ways. And I think it's one thing to use it for the efficiency and a factor in decision making. It's a very different story when we're starting to use AI to manipulate the behavior altogether. And it's interesting how you mentioned, obviously, how within your company, you draw a very explicit distinction, because, you know, this is where your principles come in. Mariam, I wanted to come back to you, because I know that in LinguaGPT, we were talking and you said an interesting point that you could use a lot more data to make it much more better and much more efficient. But you said that a lot of the times you stop yourself from looking into a lot of the customer's data because of the ethical principles. If you can talk a little bit about that.
I mean, just to give you a brief, first of all, what LinguaGPT is, we let you interact with AI in 118 languages. And so you put in a user request and we could actually look at it. But our culture and the ethical policies that we abide ourselves with, we don't. Even though, just like, for example, you know how banks at some point could do anything with, and the goal was to just make money, but they would utilize any way just to get money out of you. But then there were regulations and policies that could confine and protect people against these kinds of tactics. And so I think at the moment, AI, there are not enough regulations. There are not enough confinements to how we can operate with AI. And for us, for banks, money was the gold. For us, it's data. So the more data we have, the more enhancements we can make in our software. And we could, in some ways, choose the unethical way to pursue having to collect that data. But we don't do that because the culture we have made at our startup, and it's a personal and a decision based on the startup. But there are other startups who could, just so they could have an upper hand in competition, could access your data and have and cross that boundary of ethical and unethical. And so that's very important to integrate such cultural cultural values in the startup or the company.
No, absolutely. And that's an interesting case study. So what is interesting to me as well is how, you know, we talk a lot about self-accountability when it comes to new technology, because, I mean, regulators always try to keep up, but obviously sometimes technology like AI, blockchain, they just...
Because it's so fast-paced.
They're so fast-paced that it's almost, you know, it raises a question of can there be efficient regulations put in place? But that is a conversation for another time. But
and just to add to your note, there are so many loopholes too. Like, okay, if I confine you not to take data from my text, can I confine you to take data from, like, let's say a written post or maybe a video? There's so many loopholes that is very easy for us to go work around and get that data that we need.
Absolutely. And I think in the public's eye, we really realize the extent of the issue when it comes to our data and privacy concerns when Cambridge Analytica scandal made the front pages, right? I think that was the first time when, a lot of people were kind of, you know, splashed with a bit of cold water to understand that whatever information they put out there is not necessarily theirs anymore. And it can be used for commercial purposes without their consent. And that opened, you know, a very different level of conversations around privacy concerns. But even in those times, right, we all remember, you know, Mark Zuckerberg making a lot of, you know, public appearances. And, you know, when startups or businesses have to answer up to these questions, I think the common denominator is we do that in order to optimize and to make our product offering more efficient. We do that for the benefit of the customers, right? So it's interesting because, you know, another word, in my opinion, for bias is, you know, customization, right? How, like, when you look at your phone today, when you look at, you know, your Amazon account, anywhere you look today, it's incredibly customized to you, to your needs, to your likes, to your dislikes. And this is the kind of service that, you know, us, the new generation, are accustomed to. When we have to go through a page, an e-commerce page that is not customized to our needs, we don't want that anymore. It's not the customer experience that we want, right? So where does this balance lie is an interesting question, right? When it comes to, you know, personalization and customization for the sake of, you know, improvement versus when that same bias comes, you know, at the cost and is being used against customers. Karim or Sandra?
I'd like to take that one if
you
don't mind. Sorry,
go for it.
I've been sitting down very quiet for a long time. You know, the contradictions that happen sometimes are quite interesting because we sit down talking about personalization, but then at the same time, we're raising the concern around privacy. How do you expect to personalize if you want to put a lot of attention into your privacy? I think for me, privacy as an umbrella has been overused quite a lot. And we are now living in an era and at a time and age where privacy needs to update itself and kind of rework around what we now consider as private information. Anyone now who has an iPhone, anyone now who operates an Android, if you use Google Maps, if you order Deliveroo, if you shop on, Farfetch or anything, no one's paid me to mention them, just to be clear. But, you know, we don't have privacy anymore. Privacy as a whole now needs to adapt to the new age that we're moving forward with. Some people consider privacy as your wallet keys on the blockchain layer, right? Because no one has access to that. It's you if you're using a ledger. But as well, if you're using a third party, then you don't really have privacy because your keys are owned by the other operating wallet. So when we talk about personalization, and then at the same time we're fighting for privacy, we need to really rebalance the shift in what we expect from platforms that we're operating or the founders that are operating these platforms, and what you as an end user want to actually achieve, you know? So for me, we operate a metaverse company. We build bespoke metaverses for clients, right? And a lot of what they want to do is personalize these experiences for their end user. For me to be able to personalize your experience, I need to know what color you like. I need to know what music you like. I need to know if you like your avatar male, female. I need to know what your date of birth is. I need to know all of these sets, data sets that should be acquired. But that's me tapping into your so-called privacy, right? The bias that exists in life needs to translate into tech. And I'm not saying it does. It needs to translate into tech for two simple reasons from my perspective anyways. On a day-to-day, we operate, right? There's bias for everything. If I'm walking into a certain store, I'm going to be biased. If it's a health store, then I'm going to pretend like I go to the gym every day. If I'm walking into McDonald's, then, you know, I've been out. I want a burger. So we apply bias on a day-to-day basis, and we don't do that because we don't do it cognitively, because it's just how we operate. It's because it makes things easier. This is why stereotypes exist. You know what I mean? So at the end of the day, when you look at bias, you have confirmation bias, you have cognitive bias, you have social bias, you have stereotypical bias. These data sets do transfer into tech, because at the end of the day, AI has so many umbrellas and so many levels to it that what everyone is talking about today is still not tapping into the core AI that people use across, you know, medical, across engineering, across oil and gas, I believe you mentioned, or even what we do with the metaverse. There are so many levels that need to be tackled before we can actually start discussing ethics in AI, before we can start discussing a third party applying ethics in AI, because this third party, chances are it's not ethical. If it's run by a human being, I can guarantee it's not ethical. There is no human being free of ethic, not free of ethics, sorry, free of bias in their life. You know what I mean? So I'll probably cut it short to give someone else a chance. But for me, you know, and I always get a lot of, well, pushback when I say that, but a lot of people are pushing right now in the Web3 space anyways for, self-sovereign identities, where, you know, you are the person responsible for your own identity and what you do with your own keys and everything like that. But do you know how many times people have actually done that and then they've lost everything that they've wanted?
One of the reasons why people say centralized exchanges would still be better than decentralized is because customer service. Again, we want certain things as users, but then when we try to apply it to the actual user experience, it doesn't always work.
Yeah, well, you know, sorry, we KYC our users on our platform for every client that we work with. And we do that for two reasons. One, you need to safeguard the other people that are around there. You know, when you're building an online world, a virtual world that's accessible by multiple people, you need to take into account grooming, harassment, bullying, identity theft, and all of that. There is a level of KYC that exists. We do get a lot of pushback to that, but at the end of the day, this is where free will comes into place. If you're not happy with something, well, leave. You know, if someone here is not enjoying this talk, leave. And it's the same with any business. You know, KYC is important. Privacy is important, but we need to understand where we apply privacy. So that was just the point I wanted to make.
It's complemented, which is tricky, because if it's about having a personalized service or having a recommendation, fine. But it's when these models are telling a company that is delivering a service, no, to that customer, don't deliver the service, don't even offer, because there is an high probability that it's going to be the wrong customer for you. So that's when I was talking about the purpose is the issue. Because if I use this predictive model to make a prescription that are making real discriminations between potential users, that's where you don't allow the free will of the user to enter into place. So that's, I think, the real tricky part. And by the way, there is a mistake in my surname. So if you, it's wrong key, instead of S, just in case.
I can give a perfect example for this. We use LinkedIn to hire people usually. So we put out ads and then we open up the hiring process.
Yeah, exactly.
Every single person that got rejected by LinkedIn was perfect for the role. Every single person that actually came through was horrible for the position. And we were extremely specific in who we wanted
Any
to hire.
LinkedIn employees in the audience, just to take up the feedback?
Yeah, so no, honestly, but make this as a note, if you ever do get rejected on LinkedIn, actually follow up with the company, because chances are LinkedIn just pushed you to the side. And it was just, I mean, I don't know what they use, but there were like 60 people who were perfect for the role and we didn't see them because it just rejected them.
That's interesting. And Karim, I think we were talking about, the utilization of AI in recruitment right before we got on stage. I think you've got an interesting example to add as well.
Yeah, that's really an interesting discussion, because it raises an important question, which is bias always bad? Because eventually we gave the example during our discussion before the session, which is if you're hiring an assistant, usually you want the assistant to understand your schedule, your way of thinking, how you write your emails, how you respond to messages, and so on. So in a way, you want a biased person. It's the same thing when you're developing an AI assistant. You want an AI assistant that fits well to your own biases. It's impossible to not have any bias. It's impossible to be fully objective. There's always subjectivity, and we cannot prevent that. That's the customization issue. So bias is not always bad. It depends on the application itself and the objective. So let's give an example. For example, let's say I'm developing an AI that is a lawyer or a prosecutor. So I give it, for example, cases from the 50 past years, and it studies these cases. So one of the interesting features in these cases is, for example, the gender of the person that committed the crime. For example, his age, his race, his skin color, and so on. So maybe including these features in this specific objective, specific application is bad. Because really, if someone committed a crime, I don't care if he's dark-skinned or light-skinned. I don't care about that. So these features, here it comes the process of feature engineering, the biases included in the data set, and so on. But the same data set, if my objective changes to I want to study the biases over the years in, let's say, prosecutions and so on, I need to include these biases. I need to include these features. So the whole model AI model design and data set design and feature engineering should fit well with the objective that I'm trying to achieve. And bias in many cases is useful, is necessary to include
it,
in the system.
It actually depends. Sorry, I just want to add one point. It actually depends because there's two different types of bias, right? There's bias, which is very kind of top view, right? So for example, I'm from Australia, so everyone expects me to speak with R&R and kind of like have that accent, right? Not true, I don't have it. But there's the other level of bias, which is tech is a male-dominated industry, okay? If you were to apply data sets or kind of that bias into businesses, then any woman who applies to a tech role could be kicked out because it's a male-dominated industry. You know what I mean? It really just depends on the data sets and how you're applying them in businesses. We've seen a lot of data sets applied where they've actually done harm to the business rather than grow it or make it more efficient or make it more acceptable for people to understand it. It's actually ruined some businesses. If you look at the statistics, businesses have gone down when they fully applied these AI. So I agree with you, but there are the bias came out, but there are different levels of bias and how it actually gets applied and what happens to it.
Absolutely. And hearing all of you here, you are all at the forefront in building and applications for AI algorithms for our day-to-day use. So it makes me feel really good that the majority, well, actually everyone here understands the difference between good and bad biases. And I think treats it as a very, I would say, serious principle or a foundation for how you run an AI business. I think when it comes to self-accountability, we can just only hope that the rest of the world that is, aiming to build the AI empire is, following a very similar mindset that, everyone on the panel here today does. And I will take a bit of a tangent here from ethics and bias in AI, but just I think it's very symbolic that we are all, coming here from a lot of different backgrounds, different parts of the world, and we're discussing these, technological innovations and challenges that we face in it here in the UAE. I mean, I'm sure everyone has seen the kind of the guru of AI these days, Sam Altman, basically called UAE the kind of the key player in the AI industry on a global scale. The recent statistics I've seen that in the last year, the tech workers numbers in the UAE increased by 120,000 people, which is, incredible influx of talent, incredible influx of, businesses that are coming here to build, to develop, to, grow. Would love to learn from anyone, maybe Mariam on the panel, what makes UAE so special?
I think I'll be very brief, and it's just one word, money. Investment is a lot in the UAE, especially in tech companies, in innovative ideas. It's highly suggestive that you come here in the UAE to get your funds funded, to get your startups funded, especially coming from a startup background myself. It is very easy to get that support of the ecosystem, be it in any industry, but tech industry per se is very active. We actually had our first ever minister of AI in the whole world. So it shows how UAE is taking this AI industry very, very, very importantly. And yeah, I think that's the main issue.
Absolutely. And apart from obviously the money, it's the smart money that is here in this ecosystem. Yeah. And as you rightly pointed out, I think we've discussed a little bit, Andrea, on how, ecosystem here is just different, if you want to say a couple of words.
Yeah, I think money for shoes is an element, but the other thing that is fascinating, what brought us here as well, is the idea that here you are working with a sort of a white canvas. You know, in any sector where you want to apply your applied research, it's not a system that you have to change or adapt from the past. Here it's something that has, at the end of the day, a few years of development, and you have the possibility to introduce immediately cutting-edge innovations. And the other important element for me is the energy and the atmosphere that you breathe in this market. I mean, people here is not at all caring about keeping their network for themselves. So everybody is pretty open to share connections and business opportunity, because you know that you are inserted in a system which is growing double digit. So there's abundance. And when there is this mindset, making the things happening is way faster and easier than in older economies like in Europe, where we come from, where the things are a little bit more stagnating. You know?
Interesting hearing it from the Italian on the panel. But I know we're running out of time, but I do want to close up with maybe a one-liner from each panelist here. If the audience were to take anything away from our discussion today, what would it be? Sandra, let's start from you.
Probably rethink what privacy means to you. In all honesty, I would probably ask everyone to do that, because that term, like I said, gets used a lot, but it's contradictory to what people actually want in their experiences. So yeah, think what privacy is, or we'll find out where you live very quickly.
Andrea?
For me, again, the keyword is purpose, because it's the purpose of what you are developing that is making the difference. Bias are... As you mentioned before, an element that it's inside the mind of who develops and is inside the algorithms as well. It's just the purpose, because you cannot create something that is reducing the free will of the people that is interacting with the things you are creating.
Sorry.
Hello. Yeah. So I agree with both answers, and I'll add maybe another idea, which is, so we discussed also that bias could be caused by the algorithm and so on. But with the progress of AI, most of the current algorithms that are used are really well, a good design to reduce statistical bias. So I suggest focusing on the data set itself, because data set remains the main cause of bias in any system, AI system. So that's one of the points why UAE is interesting, because we have diverse team, we have diverse biases that average as well when we're collecting and creating
that's
our data set. So focus on the data set, make sure your data set is good quality, not biased, and you'll get a good AI system.
Mariam?
To add to Karim's point of view, I think, I really believe in that bias is necessary, but bias is also good in the sense that we are not really at a disadvantage 24/7 when people think of us or see ourselves in a biased way. Sometimes it is an advantage for us. And so none of us, and it might be a controversial topic, but none of us is really that at a disadvantage because of a bias. There are the advantages to that, be it in AI or in real life. And I think that's my one word. One
that's
sentence?
Absolutely. No, thank you so much today. And I think if there was anything like a message to everyone here is, I've been here all day, been talking to incredible panelists. I've been talking to a lot of people here. And I just want to point out that I get incredibly inspired when I speak to people in the tech space, for one reason only, is that even when you're a small startup, you are driving the industry, you are creating the foundation for years and decades to come. And I hope that you feel that way and you see that way, even if you're just starting up. We all started somewhere. So thank you very much, dear panelists. Thank you so much, the audience, for being with us here today. And have a lovely rest of the day.
Thank you.
Thank you for tuning in. We hope you enjoyed the episode. You can find our content on Anghami, Spotify, and Apple Podcast. Follow us on social media @StepConference, and let's stay in touch.